I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Washington County, Texas, the birthplace of the Republic of Texas way back in 1836. After the outbreak of the Texas Revolution, General Sam Houston made his headquarters at the town of Washington in December 1835. Today, Washington on the Brazos is fondly known as the birthplace of Texas because on March 1, 1836, Texas delegates met here to formally announce Texas's intention to separate from Mexico. Following the defeat of the Mexican army at San Jacinto on April 21, 1836, town leaders lobbied for Washington's designation as the permanent capital of the Republic of Texas, but leaders of the Republic favored Waterloo, later renamed Austin. Washington County was established in 1836, but eventually the county seat was moved to the town of Brenham in 1844. The town of Washington continued to thrive as a center for the cotton trade until the mid-1850s, but the construction of railroads bypassed the town, and by the turn of the 20th century, the town of Washington was virtually abandoned. Today, the historic town site is home to the Washington on the Brazos Historical Site with three main attractions: the Star of Republic Museum, a replica of Independence Hall, and Barrington Plantation. Come along and join Jonathan Fahler, site manager at Washington on the Brazos Star of the Republic Museum. Afterwards, we'll head over to the village of Burton, Texas, for a visit with Steph Jarvis, the museum director at the historic Burton Farmers Gin, the last operational cotton gin in America. Back in the 1920s, more than 4,000 cotton gins operated across Texas. Today, the gin in Burton stands as the lone remaining, fully operational example of the once ubiquitous cotton gin. Gins served as the hub of the community life in cotton towns across Texas, with the state leading the nation as the number one cotton producer. Sadly, overseas competition forced the gin to cease operations in 1974. Jarvis noted that the gin and its artifacts are largely in their last used condition and comprise one of only a few such intact rural industrial sites in America. The bonus today is that the gin is periodically still fired up on special occasions to produce cotton, employing the old Bessemer engine. We'll then head over to the historic town of Brenham, the home of Blue Bell Ice Cream, for a visit with David Thomas, the director at the Brenham Heritage Museum. Exhibits and collections reflect a focus on the history and culture of Washington County. Originally serving as the United States Post Office, the elegant building listed on the National Register of Historic Places was eventually repurposed as the Brenham Heritage Museum, with some of the historic post office architectural motifs left intact.
My name is Jonathan Fahler. I'm the site manager for Washington on the Brazos State Historic Site.
And whereabouts are we?
We're in Washington, Texas, which is in the eastern end of Washington County along the Brazos River. So we are about an hour outside of Houston, Texas. We're 2 hours east of Austin, Texas.
This is literally the birthplace of Texas.
Yeah. We are preserved as the site where Texans declared their independence from Mexico on March 2nd of 1836, elected a government, served as the capital of that nation from 1842 to 1846. So this is really the heart of the story of the Republic. Washington becomes a thriving community, a thriving town, serves as the capital of the Republic in 1842. Sam Houston brings the capital back here, the presidential offices, the Senate and House of Representatives meet here. In 1845, this is where the Texas Congress meets to begin discussing the terms of annexation with the United States. So this is both the place where Texas became Texas, but it's also the place where Texas became the 28th state in the Union.
You're in the middle of a major renovation, remodel. Talk to us about the big picture of what's here and where it's going.
Yeah, about a $51 million renovation. Project itself touches on much of the historic site, everything from a complete renovation of the Star of the Republic Museum, where we're sitting today, to renovating our visitor center, renovating our conference center, which is a rental facility that we have here. You come out here today, and Washington is pretty much a preserved archaeological site. The town disappeared slowly over the course of the latter half of the 19th century. In 1912, there was a prairie fire that kind of swept through the abandoned buildings and burned what was left. So there really is nothing of the town today above the ground.
Word picture of what's going to be here when you're done with your renovation.
A Smithsonian quality museum, complete with interactive media experiences, tremendous displays of our over 9,000 objects in our collection. I would say immersive living history opportunities. They'll be able to hear the ringing of a blacksmith's hammer from a forge that was operated by enslaved blacksmiths. They'll be able to step into Sam Houston's presidential office. They'll be able to go into Hatfield's Exchange. They'll be able to look at the only known to exist Lone Star flag from the Republic period that's in our collection. So significant objects that will receive places of prominence during this experience.
Follows ramp up as a destination for yellow school buses loaded with kids.
You know, we see several thousand school kids annually. And I know that there's a lot of excitement about what's to come for our school groups.
So we're staying over in Brenham. Is that a popular base camp for people coming here?
Yeah, Brenham is about 18 miles from here. It's a great place to set up your base camp. Lots of great restaurants, lots of places to stay. Bluebell ice cream, of course, is...
You just had breakfast there.
Yeah, ice cream for breakfast is a great way to start a Texas trip.
Jonathan, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for your time.
To learn more.
Washington on the Brazos State Historic Site, Barrington Plantation, Fanthorpe Inn, and the Star of the Republic Museum. But if you Google search Washington on the Brazos, you'll come up with two websites. One will be the state website, the other one will be our friends group's website.
Jonathan Paylor, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
My name is Steph Jarvis, and I am museum director here at the Texas Cotton Gin Museum in beautiful Burton, Texas.
And how far from Dallas?
We are halfway in the middle of Houston and Austin, literally. Okay. 79 and 80 miles. Of course, Washington County has a lot of amazing history. Our specific gin is, according to all accounts that we have heard, our oldest operating cotton gin left in the United States.
What?
Yeah. Yes, so it was completed in August of 1914. So now it is 110 years old. You can travel around the country. You can find older structures, older cotton gin structures. What this one has with a combination of the engine that powers it, all of the equipment inside, you know, a bulk of our records from the 60 years that it operated, you know, makes it something that's pretty special.
Was it economics that wound up shutting it down?
It was a couple of different things. So 1974 was when the gin ginned its last bales. It ginned 7 bales in that year. That's not enough. So in the 1970s, you had a combination of things. You had polyester coming along, right? Mm-hmm. And it's stealing some of the thunder of cotton. So cotton was struggling. You had the government continuing with programs like the allotment program, where they're paying farmers to grow less and less cotton.
Right,
and
right.
So everything just kind of...
Perfect storm.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything mixed together. It just wasn't profitable for our little area right here, because all around us, you're still growing the cotton.
Interesting.
So Washington County still has about 3 cotton growers left, but they're closer to the Brazos River bottom.
What a miracle that this gin didn't just get dismantled and hauled away.
They were thinking about it. So a private owner owned it already by the time the 1980s came along, and he was getting bids from local contractors to tear it down. You had the local heritage group that was interested in saving it, but you had a lot of other locals who thought, it's just the old gin, you know? I mean, why do people want to see that? The Smithsonian came down, checked it all out. They came back to them and said, you've got something really special here, and you need to get all of the equipment running, get everything back in shape. You'll be something that's truly special. And that's what they did. They took that to heart, and it took them years to do it.
When you were a little girl, was your grandma around? Did she tell you stories?
Yeah, so my grandmother, we were fortunate to have my grandmother for a really long time. So she did tell us stories. She didn't always tell the happiest stories about the cotton side of it, right? but it was part of their life. It was part of what they did. And so I've always respected that, I think. And yeah, that's what I think about the most.
Well, I know you have a commitment you got to get to. So.
Yeah, I could talk about this for all day. So it's
So Stephanie, to learn more.
TexasCottonGinMuseum.org, and we try to get as much information on there as possible. We are on Facebook. When we do fun things like run the engine and do other things that are kind of out of the ordinary, like a while back we took our 1.5-ton flywheel off of the Bessemer engine because our engine crew had to repair it. We posted on our Facebook page. So,
and once again, where is your neck of the woods?
Burton, Texas, halfway between Houston and Austin. And my name is Steph Jarvis, and I am the museum director at the Texas Cotton Gin Museum, texascottongenmuseum.org.
And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the heart of Texas.
I fell in love beneath the Texas moon above, somewhere south of San Antonio.
Hi, my name is David Thomas. I'm the executive director for the Brenham Heritage Museum in Brenham, Texas.
So here you are in Brenham, Texas, the historic roots of Texas right around here, right?
Brenham itself was not that well established or very much of anything, other just a small group of people living. But nearby and the town of Washington is where the Texas independence was signed, and a lot of the political work that established Texas as we know it took place.
So tell us about your museum. You're in an old post office repurposed.
Construction started in 1914 for this post office building, and it's a lovely neoclassical building that we've done a complete restoration on, and we're very pleased to both preserve the building and repurpose it as a heritage history museum.
What would somebody see today?
The main thing is the sense of exploration. So no matter what I say today, there will always be something else that you can come and discover for yourself. Our most recent addition is a really wonderful exhibit portraying the European immigration routes that's established this area, not just Brenham itself, but several communities in the area, primarily German, Polish, and Czech. And there's a great interactive display so that you can explore that history.
On the main floor, you have a display about historic photography, including an African-American woman who lived here for a while.
Louise Ozell Martin, and it's a really fantastic way to understand a lot of the different sort of things that changed in Brenham, and she's from Brenham, and she did some of her work here, but she also had her studio for a long time in Houston, and she photographed some really well-known people, such as Martin Luther King's funeral, and it's a really fantastic display, and one of the ways that you can interact with it is that you can use a receiver there and listen to an interview with her and see just exactly how audacious a personality she had. A portrait that Coretta Scott King.
To learn more,
go to BrenhamHeritageMuseum.org and explore our website. And my name, once again, is David Thomas. I'm the executive director at the Brenham Heritage Museum.
Awesome.
I wish I was sitting right under the X in Texas, right in the heart of where my heart must be.
Toward the end and after the conclusion of the Civil War, more than 557 freedom colonies were formed across Texas, with 8 in the city of Brenham. The colonies were formed by formerly enslaved citizens, often with the assistance of the federal government's Freedmen's Bureau, formerly known as the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, established by Congress in 1865 as a branch of the United States Army. It was to be a temporary agency formed to provide relief to thousands of refugees, black and white, who had been left homeless by the Civil War. The Camp Town Freedom Colony in Brenham, Texas, no longer exists, but the Camp Town Cemetery survives as a palpable reminder of a time when newly freed slaves had to learn to fend for themselves in the segregated South. Initiatives to unearth the story of the people who inhabited Camptown Freedom Colony and were buried in the cemetery are being conducted by numerous organizations, including the Texas 10 Historical Explorers, the Brenham Heritage Museum, the Texas Freedom Colonies Project, the National Park Service, and the Texas Historical Commission. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me at the Camptown Cemetery for a visit with Jennifer Eckerman, Director of Tourism and Marketing for the City of Brenham, Texas, to discover the rest of the story.
My name is Jennifer Eckerman. I am the Tourism and Marketing Director for the City of Brenham. And for the last year and a half, we have been working on telling the story of freedom colonies in Washington County.
And what is a freedom colony?
Most freedom colonies were developed beginning towards the end of the Civil War. In Texas, once the formerly enslaved were emancipated, it's like all of a sudden people found out they were free. More than half of our county's population had been formerly enslaved. It's hard to even imagine that in a moment your life totally changes. And they hadn't been able to be educated. They had to learn to take care of their families. It was a very turbulent time here. So they needed to find places where they could feel safe. In Brenham, there were troops that were stationed here during the Reconstruction period. Camptown, one of our freedom colonies, was a place that the newly freedmen could find a place where they were safe, start their lives, and figure out how they would survive. We're sitting in Camptown Cemetery. We don't know the oldest grave here, but it was definitely right after the Civil War when people started being buried here. Freedom colonies were normally developed around a church and eventually a school, businesses. All of those things are represented here. There are two churches that are a part of the Camptown history. There's this cemetery, a school that started here, a black school that eventually became Pickard High School. And so there's a lot of history just right around us. But I think this cemetery is really, I think, a place where people started telling more stories. And as things were uncovered here over the years, there was a desire for more of the story to be told. We in Brenham had done a good job of finding a really fascinating story for us locally, which was the burning of Brenham in 1866. A lot of planters here. It was a very agricultural area. And so when emancipation happened, there were people needing jobs, not knowing how to work. The white agricultural part of the community didn't have people to help with the work on their property. And it was just kind of a violent time. There's a great story. There's a railroad that was being built between Galveston, trying to head to Austin. And right at the beginning of the Civil War, the train stopped here. And so there were people coming to this area, getting off the train and heading west, and people from the west coming. And there's a story about George Custer and his wife who came through Brenham on their way to Austin. And the memories of his wife, an old train trestle down here, riding the train. So she has some memories, and she talks about how when they got off the train in Brenham, they saw everybody had a gun. The youngest person they saw to the oldest person, everybody had guns. It's definitely like a Wild West story that hadn't been told. And so what we came to learn over the years was that it was just half the story. It was one side of the story. When the research was being done, there wasn't a lot of local black history that had been written. Luckily, there was a group that was started a little bit later called the Texas 10 Historical Explorers. And that group was dedicated to researching local black history.
At what period of time did they start their research, roughly?
I would say probably around 2014 or 15.
Okay, so recent. Yeah.
Yes, it was recent. That was information that wasn't available when we were researching the Burning of Brenham story. And we just realized we need to do a better job of sharing our full story. With the Burning of Brenham story, we developed a little pocket park downtown, and it told that story. So it's a neat little pocket park in downtown. But it only told part of the story. So when we had the opportunity to host the Smithsonian exhibit, we thought this is a great time to come together to be able to tell this story. Having the Smithsonian coming to town gave us some credibility to go out and do fundraising for this. And so now when you go downtown and walk through Tobin Park and hear this and read about this really fascinating, well-documented story, we're able to say, but this is just part of what was happening in our community at that time. And we're now able to encourage people to learn about how these freedom colonies were settled in our area. And I think there was a professor at A&M, Dr. Andrea Roberts, who started a Texas Freedom Colonies Project. They have found more than 500 freedom colonies across the state.
Wow.
And they were across the South, too. But in Brenham in Washington County, there were 19 freedom colonies found in our county. So we in Bells Alley were able to tell the story of why we needed freedom colonies. There's a quote on the first one from someone, a formerly enslaved person, who said, "And just like that, we was free." And it's like, it's hard to even imagine that feeling, to have been enslaved for all those years and to know nothing else, not to be educated. And all of a sudden, you're responsible for taking care of your family and figuring out how to survive this very turbulent time. And so they found places they were safe. And Camp Town was the first and probably the largest freedom colony in Brenham. I grew up in this community and never knew much about it.
So you didn't really hear the story?
No, yet. I didn't hear the story. And I think there are a lot of our local Black community that today is starting to learn the story, because it just, so we're going back and telling the story.
To learn more?
We have a webpage that right now has information about the Sound Walk and Freedom Colonies. I think the best place for the most general information is Texas 10 Historical Explorers. And my name is Jennifer Eckerman, and I'm the Tourism and Marketing Director for the City of Brenham.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
The devil's dead. The devil's dead. Know some folks says that.
It all started with butter way back in 1907 with the formation of the Brenham Creamery Company in Brenham, Texas. But the workers just couldn't resist making a little ice cream on the side. At first, the employees consumed most of their production, but the word got out and neighbors started lining up for a share of their own. Bluebell continued with their butter production until the latter 1950s. When the demand for their ice cream led them to shift their focus and start producing ice cream full-time. Before long, the name Bluebell became synonymous with Texas. As far back as I can remember, even when I was stationed in San Antonio in the Air Force long, long ago, whenever the subject of Texas was brought up in conversation, inevitably, the name Bluebell was mentioned, and everyone's eyes would light up with a big, knowing smile. And the same thing holds true today. Mention the name Texas, and sooner than later, the topic of Bluebell ice cream pops up. Until the 1980s, their ice cream was a proprietary Texas product with distribution limited to within the state's borders. But the legend and lore and demand was gaining traction across America, which spurred Bluebell ice cream to widen their distribution. And today it's on the shelves, mostly in 23 southern states, with more locations on their hit list. In addition to the mothership facility in Brenham, Texas, satellite ice cream factories are located in Oklahoma and Alabama, along with more than 65 branch distribution facilities. Guess what flavor tops Bluebell's popularity chart? It's homemade vanilla. Another iconic flavor in their broad ice cream lexicon is their cookies and cream, and they were the first ice cream producer to introduce the legendary flavor to America. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in Brenham, Texas for a visit with Joe Robertson, Executive Director of Marketing and Advertising at Bluebell Ice Cream World Headquarters. Robertson has been with Bluebell for 39 years, and his passion for the company and its delectable products remain unflagging.
My name is Joe Robertson. I'm the Executive Director of Advertising and Marketing with Bluebell Creameries.
Bluebell for quite a while, huh?
Yes, sir. I've been with Bluebell for 39 years. Started in the Dallas market as a route sales delivery guy. And now, about 11 years ago, I moved to Brenham as the advertising and marketing.
Bluebell is iconic in America. It's synonymous with ice cream, really.
Absolutely, it is. We've been around for 118 years. We were founded in Texas in 1907, and then we just kind of gradually grew in the southeastern states, and now we stretch from Las Vegas on the west all the way to Virginia on the east coast and up to just south of D.C., Denver, Indianapolis, across the northern parts of our territory, parts of 23 states.
You have your eyes on California and Oregon and Washington?
We have our eyes on expansion for sure. In the next few years and in the years to come, we're always looking for markets. Went into St. Louis market this year. It surprised us, and within a few months, we were the number one ice cream in St. Louis. So we're looking for more opportunities that come our way, but we want to make sure that we do it the Bluebell way, which means not only do we manufacture the product, but also we distribute the product, and so the Bluebell person is handling the product all the way to the store shelf.
There's a saying that sum of the parts is greater than the whole, and that applies to Bluebell. Wherever I travel throughout the South, Texas, or Alabama, or wherever, if you mention the word Bluebell, what's the reaction? You know, it's like a big smile and a, oh yeah.
So true. Anywhere I go, if I mention I'm with Bluebell ice cream, it's a showstopper. Immediately, I'm sort of a minor celebrity. And so it is.
Ice cream. It's bigger than life.
The way we do it and the way that our folks are part of the community that they work in, it kind of helps create memories for people, right? So we're involved in those people. We're involved in our churches and our organizations in the area. So anytime we can participate in events with our ice cream, what's better than having that event or having that meeting over a bowl of Bluebell ice cream?
All you made was vanilla ice cream. It would be just fine. But you guys are always pushing the limit. I mean, last time we were together years ago, I think you were monkeying around with bananas.
And then some other areas will like, you know, nut flavors and so on. So we try to have different flavors that meet the flavor palette of all types of people.
Bluebell, was it birthed in Brenham, Texas?
Yes, it started in Brenham, Texas in 1907, and just as a butter company, believe it or not. And then in 1911, that's when we made our first ice cream, and we made it at a rate of 2 gallons a day, and most of that was eaten by the employees. So at some point in our history, we decided to, hey, let's stop making butter and let's concentrate on ice cream, and it was the best decision we made. So we are singular focused on making the best ice cream we possibly can.
Started with butter.
Exactly.
Of all the Bluebell flavors, what is the number one most popular?
The number one flavor for Bluebell is homemade vanilla. If you take half gallons, pints, or cups and add that all together, that's about a third of our business.
Vanilla. That's so interesting.
People say that you can tell how good a brand of ice cream is by either their vanilla or their chocolate. And those two flavors are in our top three.
Makes sense because you can't hide anything.
No, there's no inclusions. It's just pure chocolate or pure vanilla.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Keith Hankins as he shares the journey to become innkeepers in Brenham, Texas, with his artist wife, Susie. The couple purchased two historic places, the classic Main Street House built in 1920 and the historic Ant Street Inn in the heart of Old Town Brenham. Keith traded in his hat as a healthcare administrator, while Susie continued her career as an artist when they decided to relocate to Brenham from St. Louis, Missouri to start the next chapter of their lives as innkeepers in Brenham. Come along and join Keith to discover the rest of the story.
My name is Keith Hankins, and my wife Susie and I own the Ant Street Inn and Main Street House here in Brenham, Texas. We're sitting in the Main Street House. Grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm not originally from Texas. I'm a naturalized Texan. My wife is a native Texan.
Where did you grow up as a kid?
I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and we moved around a little bit when I was a kid. We finally made it to Texas when I was 12.
How did you end up here in Brenham?
An interesting question. We were living in St. Louis, Missouri at the time, and my wife and I knew that we were going to come back to Texas eventually when we moved up to St. Louis. We promised ourselves we'd be there at least 6 years because that would allow our youngest to graduate from high school. We had been there about 4.5 years, and I said, okay, Suze, I'm ready to go back to Texas.
What sort of work were you guys doing at the time?
I was in healthcare administration and management. My wife was a stay-at-home mom, the quintessential stay-at-home mom who was never at home. She was always out volunteering somewhere, church or library or school. But when I told her, I'm ready to go back to Texas, she said, well, we'll be empty nesters when we go back. I said, yeah, so? She said, you want to keep doing what we're doing? I said, no, but nobody's going to pay me what I make now to do something different. And she said, well, when we go back to Texas, I'm not just going to sit around the house, and I don't want to just go get a job. So if we go back to Texas, let's make our dream come true. Let's buy a bed and breakfast.
Something you guys had dreamed about.
It is, yes. I have to remind myself every now and then that, yes, I am living the dream. But we knew very early in our marriage we wanted to own and operate a business together, but we didn't know what. It took us a while to figure out, yeah, we could do a bed and breakfast. So when the time came, we had two criteria. Number one, it had to be in Texas, and number two, it had to support both of us. We didn't want a situation where one of us would have to go and get an outside job to make this other thing float.
So Brenham wasn't on the pre-targeted list. It just kind of happened then.
Correct. We were looking all over the state, and back then, the Texas State Comptroller's Office published a lot of information if you paid the hotel occupancy tax. So I could sit in my basement in St. Louis and Google bed and breakfast for sale in Texas, get this list, and then go over to the comptroller's office and see how they were doing.
Reality check.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm kind of a finance geek, number cruncher guy, and I figured out pretty quickly that a bed and breakfast like the Main Street House with four or five, or if you were lucky, even seven rooms, wasn't going to make it for us. So what was interesting, though, is on the very first search, at the very top of the page, was this thing in Brenham, Texas called the Ant Street Inn. I looked at the website and I thought, wow, that's big. Wow, that's beautiful. Wow, that's expensive. Never mind. But as weeks turned into months and my wife became more and more upset with me because I hadn't found anything yet, and I said, look, I'm not going to buy something that I know on day one isn't going to meet our two criteria. I said, okay, let's look at this thing called the Ant Street Inn. Okay, so this was like the first quarter of 2011. The comptroller's information was about 6 months behind. So I could see the first half of 2010, and then I could go back as far as I wanted to go back. You know, remember this thing in 2008, 2009 called the recession. For a lot of people, that was just a horrific period of time, but not for the Ant Street Inn and not for the city of Brenham.
How do you explain that?
Well, it's purely anecdotal, speculative on my part, but I think what it is that people still needed to get away. And instead of going to Mexico or the Bahamas or Europe, let's go to Brenham. Because Brenham's sales taxes during that period of time, very stable if not growing, and the Ant Street Inn, their finances were in great shape through that whole period. So we said, well, let's go take a look at that thing called the Ant Street Inn in Brenham.
How many rooms?
It has 15 guest rooms. It also has a 4,000 square foot ballroom. And there's a restaurant on property. Beautiful gardens where weddings and other parties and corporate events can occur. We didn't start thinking about buying another property or expanding. Let me use that word, expansion. Until the city was very interested in a property down the street. If you haven't seen yet, you're going to, I'm sure. The Arnhill Center at Historic Simon Theater, otherwise known by Brenhamites as the Simon. And there was a not-for-profit organization that had been put together to bring that thing out of the mothballs. It's beautiful. They did such a fantastic job. There's a need for more beds in downtown, and we could not expand the Ant Street Inn. It was enclosed. So we said, well, let's look at another property then, and we want it to be close by. And here we are at Main Street House, about a quarter mile away.
Bones were good on both.
Oh, the bones were great on both. So the Main Street house, come to find out, was a bed and breakfast in a previous life. When we bought it, it was a private home and had been for about 5 years. But prior to that, it was a bed and breakfast.
How much is the breakfast a part of the allure and the draw?
When we first got into the industry, we attended some seminars for aspiring innkeepers. And oftentimes we would hear these innkeepers that would be so upset at their guests because they didn't come down to breakfast. You know, I'd spent all this time and energy making breakfast. And
they weren't on time.
Exactly, yeah. But what Susie and I have discovered in our experience, if you have created an environment that is so comfortable and so relaxing for your guest that they would rather sleep through an awesome breakfast, you have achieved the absolute goal. That is the goal.
Let's jump back to Ant Street Inn, only because of time limitation. Is Ant Street Inn head and beds only, or is there a breakfast too?
Breakfast is included there too, but it's served in a restaurant. The restaurant, we own the real estate, but we lease the restaurant, so we don't own it. But part of their lease agreement is they would provide breakfast for our guests.
Mixed continental or a full breakfast?
Oh, it's a full breakfast, order off a menu. For us, our off-season is our summertime, because we do not allow children under the age of 12 as overnight guests. And we're really not set up to accommodate families.
To learn more about your world,
AntStreetInn.com and then Main Street House.
Brent Phillips and his wife Daniela and their kids own and manage the Milk and Honey Ranch in Burton, Texas. Their ranch is way out in the country, but close to Texas towns and cities. For example, Brenham and Texas A&M are surprisingly close by, and it's a comfortable drive to major urban centers such as Houston, Austin, and San Antonio. But once you settle in at the ranch, you'll feel like you're a planet away from urbanity. In addition to the cottages, casitas, a treehouse, and geodesic dome accommodations, there's an upscale spa and gym, a pool, and more at this distinctive four-star hideaway. For families, a big draw at the 54-acre farm stay experience is the opportunity to feed the animals, milk a cow, collect eggs, and even cuddle a Highland cow. Kayaking, canoeing, e-biking, and skeet shooting target practice are equally popular draws. The most fascinating aspect of Milk and Honey Ranch is the backstory of how it came to fruition. Brent and his family migrated from South Africa to start a new life in America, but it was an encounter with a major freeze and power cut that led Brent to reimagine life for his family without being dependent on the energy grid or dependent on ordering food for the family online. Brent visualized and subsequently built a sustainable organic farm for his family in 2021, and they all came to love their new lives so much it led the Phillips to share their agrarian utopia with the world. They built an array of accommodations with attendant upscale amenities and services, including a full-service restaurant, and opened their ranch to overnight guests, and they haven't looked back. Come along and join Brent Phillips at the Milk and Honey Ranch to discover the story of the family's incredible life-changing journey.
I'm Brent Phillips, and we are at Milk and Honey Ranch.
Well, in the country.
Yes, in Burton, Texas, which most people have never heard of Burton, but it's right next to Brenham, which was made famous by Blue Bell Creamery.
Ice cream.
The ice cream place.
Tell us about your story here. How did this come about? How did you come here?
It began after a few events had happened. I was happy in suburbia. It's all I've ever known, in apartments and the city, even in South Africa. COVID happened, which opened a lot of people's eyes to just taking some things for granted and re-looking and evaluating life. And then we had a big freeze in Texas, which shut down everything. So all my knowledge and everything that I'm good at disappeared, because without electricity, my skill set of being a software engineer meant nothing. We had no water. We had no electricity. We didn't have food because we were the Uber Eats family. So all our meals were Uber Eats. And so suddenly we had no food. And so that was a wake up. And so I decided to buy a ranch so that myself and my family could learn another side of life.
Reset, big time.
A big reset. I realized that I was a consumer and I wasn't really producing anything as far as the basic things. And I thought, you know, we take a lot of things for granted, food and these things. And if we grow it from the ground up and raise it, I believe it's going to make us better human beings.
Let's say the power goes out this winter.
Yes.
Now how are you going to do?
So now we have solar power here. We have wells that we're able to run. You know, we got hit by a tornado this year and we were able to, you know, navigate around that. So it just looks very different. We're able to raise our own food now, our own veggies. It's hilarious considering that I learned everything from YouTube.
And it worked.
And it worked. My kids are far more grateful. I'm far more grateful, my wife. And now we love that so much that we thought, how do we position ourselves that other people can come here and experience it for themselves? Because you can read something online, but when you experience it for yourself, that's when life change really happens.
When do you sleep?
I don't sleep a lot because I still have my software company. Plus, I have this, but I get to work. I get to build software from this beautiful environment and meet, you know, we'll meet 2,000 people now in a year, new people that I would never have met otherwise if we didn't have this place.
Do you have places where people stay overnight?
Yes. So we've got 14 stays for a total of 64 people.
I see geodesic domes. Did you build those?
Yes, we built those. We've got all different kinds of stays. We were experimenting, you know, because there's lots of different kind of people out there. Some people.
Could you go yurt?
Yes. But, you know, they got a TV in, you know, they luxury. One thing I did do was I put the bathroom outside instead of inside, which was a risk. I didn't know how people would react to that. But the reason why I did that was it just gives you a little more adventure. Otherwise, you might as well just stay in one of our casitas.
Well, when I was on Boca Blanca Game Lodge Adventure, my hut went to an outdoor bathroom. I'll never forget looking up, there's an elephant looking down at me.
I wish we had elephants, but yes, you know what?
You could order one.
Yeah, we could.
Maybe you should do that.
I should. Destroy my ranch in a month.
There's an elephant rescue in Tennessee.
Okay.
We're retired circus elephant. They bring them out there. Yeah. And I think there's an exotic game lodge sort of place in Texas somewhere. Yeah. Are you familiar with that?
I think I've heard of it. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
They have those outback safari tents that you stay in.
I think in time, you know, as the ranch grows, I'd love to get some African animals because that's what we grew up with. Obviously not in our backyard, but familiar with them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit more. So you have more traditional places to stay too?
So we really built for family, you know, so we have some units that can sleep 8 people, some that can sleep 6, some that can sleep 2. We've got a treehouse. So all different kinds of options for people. We wanted to make it as comfortable and enjoyable so that people could explore the farm and all of that, but still feel familiar when they would come to sleep at night.
Do you have hands-on experiences?
Yes, we do.
Example.
So we've got cow cuddling, which people love. Literally, we've got these mini fluffy Highland cows that people can hug and take photos of, and you can't believe how much they love it. You can milk a cow, you can feed the animals, you can collect eggs, you know, whatever level you want to get involved, we allow that.
The guests aren't free ranging, they're kind of guided experiences, right?
We have both. For the guests who want to just do it themselves, they can go from enclosure to enclosure, feed the animals and experience that. Plus, we have a lot of free range animals that are just walking around. Sure, when you're trying to drive on the road, that's when they love to run out.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know, hit a bunch of guinea hens or
that's
whatever.
Right.
Try to stop the car.
That's right. You know, in the morning, you hear the peacocks going off, you hear the guineas, you hear the chickens, the dogs. It's just amazing that this is my life after my whole life has been behind a screen, writing code. We have this, but it didn't come without sacrifice and didn't come without massive risk to make a life change like that.
Yeah, because you didn't know if anybody would show up.
I didn't know. You know, in the beginning, my family was really angry with me because I pulled them out of their nice suburban life and we were living in a barn. So, not a barndominium, a barn.
We're outside of a restaurant.
Yes.
So you have an on-site place to eat, breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Yes, we do. So we really try to take care of our guests as much as we can, and we try to make it easy for parents. You know, because every time you have to pack up a kid to take them somewhere, it's that much more work. So we try to do as much as we can that families can come here.
They unpack and stay.
Exactly. And so we make family-style meals because we're encouraging people to talk. And if you don't have to cook dinner, that's just, you know, you can sit on this porch and take in the view, and we can provide that experience for people.
And how did you let the world know that you're here? And how did they respond?
So it started with Instagram and Airbnb. So we listed one unit on Airbnb, didn't know if anybody would book. And people booked. And still to this day, it's been 2 years now. Every time we get a booking, I'm so grateful because that person or that family, they could have chose to go anywhere in the U.S.
What piques their interest?
So I think it's the combination of the luxury stays and the farm, because there's many luxury stays and there's many farms. But having brought those two things together is unique that we can provide that. And really, you know, we did no market research. It was really just
gut instinct that drove you.
Yes, it was what I was trying to do for my family, and thinking, man, if I want this for my family, there's got to be other people out there.
Are they still pissed at you?
No. Now they love it. Now they would never go back, you know, to the city. But man, it took courage when you've got an upset wife, an upset 13-year-old daughter who's letting you know every day that you've ruined her life.
Right.
But now she's 16 and she's so happy.
Yeah, but at 13, didn't matter what you did.
That's right. Yeah.
They don't come back to planet Earth by 17 or 18.
Yes, for sure. But I would say it almost feels like I had a second shot at life that I didn't know I needed.
Totally not game-changing, but life-changing for you and your family,
yes.
Big time.
Life-changing. I'll tell you a story about my son. So my son was 11 at the time. He loves Buffalo Wild Wings and, you know, all of those things. And the first time we had to harvest some chickens, he cried. And he cried and cried and cried. And it's like, why are we doing this and whatever? It just opened up a whole new realm in his heart that he could learn to appreciate the sacrifice that goes into food.
Kind of the Native American approach,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I explained to him, I was like, we give these animals the best possible life that they can have, and then they harvest it. It's not like they holding,
right.
You know, this or this.
Jail cell.
But we are giving them the best possible life. And now when you walk into order wings somewhere, it's not just disconnected thing. You know the effort it takes. You know the life that it takes and all of that. So the respect and appreciation that comes from raising your own food is life-changing.
Have you got any of your old friends from South Africa to come visit?
Yes, I have had some, and they all want to come live here. True story. Everyone who comes here, they're like, please, man, how can we live here?
Well, I think if I lived in Joburg, I'd want to be tempted to come here.
Yes, for sure. Because in Joburg, you can't have something like this. You know,
you can with high barbed wire.
You know, the crime and murders and everything, especially for farmers in South Africa. So this is...
It's a dream.
It's a dream.
Never really imagined this could be.
You know, but it's amazing how, you know, I give credit to God and to how life can open your eyes through tough times.
This transformation in your life and your family's life is pretty rapid, pretty
yes.
Head spinning. I mean, you're talking about going back to the year 2000, and it was a different world for you guys.
Yes. Yeah, we've only been here 3.5 years. So, and if you'd asked me 5 years ago, do you think you would be happy having short-term rentals? I would say like, no, I would never want to do that. But yet this has been meeting people. I would say 99% of the guests that come here are delightful. 1%, we're happy to never come back again. But we've made so many friends of people who were strangers.
One of the biggest challenges is your employees.
You know, we've been really blessed in that area in that I've met people who really care about the business. They care about the mission. So it's not just a paycheck. They love the people.
This is lifestyle changing for them too.
Absolutely.
They don't want to go away.
Yes.
Employee retention is pretty high.
Incredibly high. Not only that, but they then refer other people. So you're getting the kind of person that you want replicated in somebody else. And I'll tell you a quick thing. You know, we had a major financial setback right in the beginning. Two of the people who work here now, you know, who have become my dear friends, I called them and I said, look, I can't promise you anything. I don't even know if we're going to be able to make it to the end of the month. I said, we're coming anyway because we're with you. You know, when you've got people like that, you can only succeed. Because they're not just looking at themselves, they're looking at the bigger picture.
That's so cool. I'm going to have to come back and stay sometime.
Oh, we'd love that.
That'd be cool. Unfortunately, I think we're getting yanked away.
Oh, okay.
So before we go, to learn more about your world.
It's milkandhoneyranch.com and also our Instagram, Milk and Honey Ranch.
And are you the social media czar for the operation?
No, we have someone else that does that. I post some videos and that sort of stuff, but it's an amazing team. It takes a lot of people that when you look out here, it looks good, but somebody had to cut the grass, somebody had to put the flowers, and I'm not doing all of that stuff. There's a caring team to do it.
So in a way, it's because you're so naive, you didn't realize you might fail. You just plowed ahead.
Yes, you know, and disruptors in any industry usually come from the outside. When you've been taught all the rules that you have to follow, you don't become a disruptor. But ignorance can sometimes be powerful.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's so cool. And your full name again?
Brent Phillips.
Thank you so much, man. This has been fascinating.
Oh,
yeah, I think God's looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Come along and join me for a fascinating visit with Jim and Kim Keeter as they share their passion for roses and propelling their business as a wedding destination and much more at the Antique Rose Emporium in Independence, Texas. The Keeters purchased the Antique Rose Emporium from founders Mike and Jean Shoup in December 2022, and it's been nonstop ever since, planting and sharing their passion for the world of legacy roses and the Antique Rose Emporium as a highly recommended Texas travel destination. So here we are at the Rose Emporium.
Yes, sir, we are. We're just so glad you guys are here. And, you know, the Rose Emporium holds a very special place in our hearts, my wife's and mine. I'm Jim Keeter, and my wife is Kim Keeter. You know, Mike and the Rose Rustlers, that whole history.
Technically, these were lost roses surviving on their own.
They were surviving on their own. They're tough old birds, and that's what drew my daddy to these roses. He was real big on native plant material as a landscape architect, and these are very much like that same tenacity that the native plants have. And it was real funny. We were giving a talk somewhere together. It's right after we purchased the place, and Mike mentioned that he walked into the cemetery and there was this rose that had been there for like 80 years. And he's like, hey, if that dead guy can grow it, I stand a chance. And so now I get to stand a chance.
There are so many varieties, and what we grow in this area are ones that do really well in the southern climates. But we do have varieties that are European roses that have been found and brought back into commerce. And that's the love of the roses. And I think there are many people, they're drawn to it, from China's to Damask roses to Noisettes. There's the Ramblers and the Climbers, so many varieties, lots to choose from.
What's most fascinating to me is these are roses that are so old and lost that they're pre-hybridization.
And everything we do here is on its own rootstock. We don't do anything grafted, any of that stuff. It's on its own rootstock. It's doing its own thing. When it leaves our field, we grow them out in a 2-gallon pot. So you've got a good, solid root mass and a very healthy plant on top of that. And of course, we have our custom shipping boxes and all that stuff. So everything arrives to you safe and sound.
You're on what, 7 acres out here in the country?
This is 9 acres on this side, and it's 21 acres on our production side around the corner over here.
Currently, we're growing 101,000 roses in production fields for release next year.
That's crazy.
It's an amazing amount of roses, and there's definitely more room for increased production as well as we continue to grow. One of the new things is the breeding program, Rose Genetics Program over at A&M. They're looking at breeding roses to be hardy, resistant to diseases as well, and then also our hybridization is also very much scent specific. Because of the love of the old roses, you can have a great looking rose that may last a long time or have a certain look, certain variety, but we want roses that are bred for smell as well as health.
And so we're going to continually be taking these old roses, breeding them together, and coming up with new varieties. We've got three.
Just released Xena.
Yeah, we just released Xena. She's beautiful. She is gorgeous.
Petite rose that has a really nice fragrance.
Yeah, she smells wonderful.
Naive question, do you take a cutting?
Yes, sir. We take cuttings and then we put them into the small trays into our grow houses. And once they've taken root, then we transfer them into the 2-gallon pots.
And they grow for close to a year before they're released. They need some time to grow up in the pots and be healthy.
Are you guys the go-to place for beautiful aromatic roses?
Oh, definitely.
For sure.
But there really isn't or wasn't that much competition.
I mean, there's some other good rose growers out there. This is a different thing that we're doing here with these roses. So when we had the big snowmageddon, it was awful. And my mother-in-law's property and father-in-law's property had 268 roses, I think. A lot of roses out there. Of course, after the 2 weeks of really, really cold, harsh weather.
This is zero, right?
Yes. And I mean, I called Mike. Everything had burned back. It looked terrible. I said, Mike, you know, what do I need to do? He said, Jimmy, you already know what to do. Just whack them off 12 inches above the ground with your steel chainsaw and they'll come back. And all but two of them did.
That's fascinating.
So that's this kind of rose.
So even though you guys have acres and acres of roses, There is much more to the Rose Emporium than just roses. This is a destination.
Exactly. It's a destination gardens. We have a full-service nursery, so we have all kinds of plant material from vegetables, herbs, natives, perennials, lots of color. We have a wonderful gift shop with lots of new items in it. We've opened up the Heritage Gallery, which is an antiques for sale. On the south side of the campus, we have a chapel, beautiful gazebo that's covered in roses, and an event center. So
this is a wedding destination.
Wedding destination. We host family reunions. We have garden parties, painting classes, potting classes. You know, anything that you would want to come out and be outdoors for. We have artists come out and set up their easels, and they'll be painting in the gardens. We've had people come out and bring their yoga mats and just enjoy being in the gardens.
That's really cool. And there's no fee for entry.
There is.
Like you said, there's a couple or a whole family, extended family, that hung out all day.
Yeah, they hung out all day. They just had a picnic and had a ball, and it was awesome.
It's really fun. We've actually seen families come in that the parents married here, and now their children are getting married here, and three and four generations are visiting.
That's really cool. So when does it technically date from the founding of the Rose Emporium?
This is our 40th year, 1984 is when it was founded.
You're so close to Texas A&M, it follows that you would have groups and classes and events out here.
Yes.
From the college.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm class of 83. My dad was class of 56. And
we do have horticulture classes come out and visit and tour the propagation and production areas as well.
Do you have any interns from Texas A&M?
We actually have two students working with us right now. And
really cool.
But the other thing that's really cool is this is the birthplace of Baylor University.
Around the corner.
Right around the corner here. Just, wow. I mean, you can throw a rock almost and hit the original campus. And we maintain that property for Baylor University. Every year in the spring, they have what's called line camp. And that's where they bus all these kids out here for a month and a half, 2 months. And all these kids come out and they learn about the history of Baylor and where Baylor University was started. And
history in this little community.
Yeah. It's tremendous. It's tremendous. I mean, this road right behind us is Sam Houston Road, because right down the street from us is where Sam Houston got baptized in Rocky Creek.
So this literally, the county is known as the birthplace of Texas.
Yes.
Yeah, a moment absolutely. On that.
Yeah, and we've got Washington on the Brazos just a few miles down the road where the Texas Constitution was drafted. It's amazing.
Interesting that this didn't become a Houston or a Dallas.
Houston's moving out here. Houston's moving out here pretty quick.
How long does it take to get to Houston?
About an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, depending on which part of Houston you're in.
A little more depth on how this happened for you. You know, you're at Texas A&M, were you agronomy? What did you think you were going to do?
My background was in rangeland ecology and management, and so I ended up becoming a ranch broker. And I did that as a buyer's representative. So the client would come to me and tell me what they were looking for, and I'd go out and search it out and find it. And while I was doing that, I was still working for my dad's landscape architectural firm.
And where was this?
In San Antonio. Daddy did the San Antonio Riverwalk in 1968 for the Hemisphere. And so that's how I knew of this. It was because of my father's practice. Man, when Kim found it on the internet.
We had a conversation where we were at in our lives, it was time to start considering the next thing. We did.
Yeah. Here we are.
And here we are, starting a whole new thing. It's really good.
To learn more about your world.
AntiqueRoseEmporium.com, Facebook, and Instagram. The handles both is also Antique Rose Emporium. We're about 30 minutes south of College Station, an hour and a half east of Austin, 15 minutes north of Brenham, and about an hour to hour and 15 minutes north of Houston.
Yep, we're right here in the middle of everything, so there's no excuse for you not to come see us.
My name is Kim Keeter.
And my name is Jim Keeter.
Jim, Kim, what a pleasure. This is great.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the birthplace of Texas.
You've been listening to the travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory.
Texas, I'm going there to see no other fellow.